So, what do you have heard about Brahmaviharas? Metta, mudita, karma, upekkha. So, these are called Brahmaviharas, what we call as four sublime abidings. That means, as human beings, we can keep our mind very beautiful, very, say, calm, relaxed, and again happy. By means of these four Brahmaviharas. And sometimes they are called Brahmaviharas because they are very pleasant. If you are familiarizing them, if you are training them, they are quite pleasant. And rather than boiling with anger, rather than boiling with, say, sort of hatred, say, envy, jealousy, so those kind of things. So we can have another option. We can have another, we can say, alternative to our mind. They are to be cultivated, by the way. They are not immediately available to us. We have to cultivate them. So, most familiar one is the metta. You might have heard metta meditation, loving kindness meditation. Metta meditation is very common, very familiar meditation. Where you feel happy about yourself, you feel friendly about yourself, and you wish may you be well, may you be happy, may you be free from suffering. So likewise, you can wish that loving feeling, kind of, says, wishing well to yourself. You can start with that, and then you can spread the same metta, same loving kindness to others as well. So likewise, this metta meditation is one very familiar, very common, very popular meditation available. That is the, we can say, the beginning of the Brahmaviharas. So instead of hatred, instead of anger, you can develop loving kindness, metta. So then it's developing as a kind of a skill in your mind. So typically what happens is when someone do something wrong to you, immediately you get angry. Immediately you want to hate, you want to say kill people. So recently things are happening, you all are familiar. What has happened to you or something. So that kind of hate can grow because it can overwhelm the mind. So we are not familiar with the opposite. How we can develop a kind of a loving atmosphere in our mind. Not only to ourselves, to the others as well. So that is we call as loving kindness. Then we have compassion, karma. That is where when someone is not well, say an example, then you feel a little empathetic, you feel a little worried, you feel that. You want to help, you want to come to the picture, you want to do something and you want to intervene, you want to help another person. So that is the karma, the compassion. The other one is what we call this mudita, altruistic joy. That is what we are going to discuss today. And the last one is called equanimity. So you feel kind of maintaining an equanimity, even in a difficult situation, even when someone is in a whatever, in the up or down, whatever the situation, you still have kind of a distance. You can maintain your balance. That is where the equanimity. But today, actually, we are going to talk about mudita, the altruistic joy. So, this one, for Brahmaviharas, so you can see loving kindness, metta, compassion, karuna, altruistic joy, mudita, equanimity, upekkha. And then Brahmavihara. So this is a kind of a definition coming from ancient books. There are, you can keep your mind like a Brahman, like a kind of beautified person. And it is a faultless mind. You are not burning, you are not suffering. Rather, you are feeling quite happy. That is why it is like a Brahman. And it's a kind of a boundless state. So we discussed that also. Now say for example, if I take this clock, if I am simply focusing my attention to that, so my attention is somewhat blocked, somewhat narrow. So only to that object where you are focusing. But in the Brahmaviharas, so your mind is quite open. Your awareness is fully open and spreaded throughout the whole universe. So that is why it's kind of opening of your mind. So quite different. One aspect is focusing your mind, and here we are doing the opposite. At the end, actually, not immediately, but later, it's a kind of boundless state of mind. So, and it is again called a divine state. Very much like while being in the human realm, you want to be a kind of a deva, you can practice this. When you feel that kind of a very beautiful, very present atmosphere in your mind. And there is no limit, as I mentioned. So you are that loving kindness can be spread all universe. You are like this light bulb, like the sun. You are spreading the whole nectar to everywhere, everyone. There is no any limit to any particular person. And there is no any category that only to this, only to him, only to her that I love. Instead, you can spend loving kindness to everyone. So that kind of boundless nature is still available. You have anything? And then, so definition of mudita. So mudita, as we discussed, altruistic joy. Now this is a little different and we are not much familiar with this quality. Very, very beautiful quality, but not much familiar. I mean, most of us are familiar with the say loving kindness, we are familiar with compassion. So they are very common, very popular. But we are not much familiar with this altruistic joy, mudita. So here idea is, so assume that your friend is quite successful. Say you have a good friend and he or she is quite successful in his education. Say we are here in the education group. So assume that your friend is quite successful in his degree, whatever it is. And are you feeling joy about it? Or are you feeling jealous about it? What do you think? What do you prefer? You want to be happy about it, that your friend has done a really good, she or he has passed with colors, got a first class, got a merit pass. So are you happy about it or you feel angry about it? How it didn't happen to me and only she was able to do that? What do you think? So typical attitude is that, right? And we are quite competitive. We are living in a very competitive world. And when someone else has success, has been more successful, probably the vast majority is not happy about it, isn't it? So why it didn't happen to me? And why I failed? Why he passed? So your question is maybe that. So others are doing well, so why can't I do that? I'm feeling frustrated by seeing someone else's success. So that's why in the society you can see how much of envy is available, how much jealousy is available. Say your neighbors. So we are living in the society. Say when your neighbors are taking a good vehicle, they are simply traveling by a bus. Are you feel happy? So you want to complain and they have stolen money, that's how they have bought the car. Oh, are you really happy? Oh my goodness, it's a lot of hard work. Unlike me, and they are really working hard. So that's how they earn money and that's how they live there. See how beautiful now they are traveling by their own car. I'm happy. So can we stay like that? So that is the altruistic joy, mudita is gone. So our human mind has that capacity. Now what is typically happening is the jealousy. You know, I'm envious about someone else's success. But the good side is that we can be still happy by seeing someone else's success. So that is something that we need to develop. So, and that actually will counter negative feelings in ourselves, like resentment, kind of envy, jealousy. So if we have the ability to be happy by seeing someone else's success, then you can counteract with the jealousy arising in your mind. But if not, you are being driven by jealousy. You might even blame that person, you may go to battle with that person, you are unhappy about that person, you worried about yourself, who's going to suffer? You yourself not being happy, right? And you yourself is suffering by seeing someone else's happiness. But the opportunity is available when someone else is also happy, successful. So you also can be happy by seeing that how well they are doing. And assume that they are really have done something good. Assume that he is a real hard worker. Say he is pretty talented in education. And say doing all the practices, say going through his papers, past papers and doing real hard work. And he got the say if we consider the A levels, advanced levels, assume that he or she has taken 4 A's or 3 A's, whatever it is. And by seeing that, if you really know that he's my friend, he has done real hard job and hard work, and now he got the best results. Now, if we are able to have some kind of warm, appreciating joy in our heart, so that is what we are talking as mudita, altruistic joy. It is not your own success. It is also possible. Now, by seeing your own success, also you can be happy. That is usually available. But the difficult part is being happy by seeing someone else's success. That is a little hard to find nowadays. So people are, that's why people are worried. People are always going through conflicts. They can't see someone else's success. They sometimes reject it. They want to overpower them. Or they want to sort of nullify that success, whatever it is. And then, now this is the innate quality of the mind. It is not something that you need to sort of completely import from somewhere. Rather, if you are capable, you can further nourish this quality. So these are all Brahmaviharas are available at the seed level, very, very basic level, they are available in our heart. But unfortunately, we are not giving enough attention to them. And we are, as a result of that, we are not promoting them. We have so many other things, many, many other businesses available. So we are not recognizing what is available in the heart. So as a result of that, we feel unhappy. We always feel frustrated. We always feel a little hateful, angry. And all these things are the ones we are promoting. Forgetting about the beautiful qualities available in our heart. So therefore, this one important quality, this what we call here as the sympathetic joy, is available as a sibling, as a little kind of suffering as in your heart. But you need to cultivate that. You need to recognize that. Otherwise, it will simply fade off. We simply, instead of that, we will grow jealousy, envy, hate even, and that something will completely go away. Now, typically, the unwholesome qualities inhibits these good qualities. Now, if you have loving kindness, the unwholesome quality is the hate, anger. So, when anger is available, this loving kindness can't come out. When jealousy is available, this the altruistic joy, this happiness can't come out. When kind of cruelty is available, the compassion can't come out. So we need to recognize these two sides. So the unwholesome mind is there, so it's somewhat inhibiting, somewhat suppressing the good qualities in our hearts. So if we are capable, so we can keep aside the unwholesome part, we can allow the wholesome part to develop. That is possible. So trainings are available, methods are available to do that. So it's a path to happiness. I mean, we all want to be happy. It's a path to happiness. Now, if I ask you a question, now in your lifetime, how many successes are you expecting? Say, every day are you going to have success? Every day? Very unlikely, right? And we are not going through exams every day. Do you like to have that? You don't like to have even exams every day, and you want to have at least say in a semester, right? In the quarter, the whole year, we may like, and again, there we like to have the success, best result. Doesn't matter. Now, say maybe another success, maybe having a job, maybe good marriage, or having children, whatever. So different things are there in our lives, so that is what we consider as kind of a type of success. And assume in our lives only few successes are there, isn't it? Not many successes. We can't be successful every day. So sometimes it's up and down. So, but on the other hand, when we are limiting our happiness only to our success, that means we have only less opportunities to be happy. Because we can be happy only when I am successful. But unfortunately, I have not always been successful. So on the other hand, therefore I can only be not much happy, because my successes are very limited. I am only happy when I get success, So my happiness is ultimately very limited. But how about if you are capable of being happy on someone else's success? Say you're a friend. Suppose you have 10 friends. And each one is in different fields. And maybe time to time they become successful, right? Maybe in education, maybe in their job, their career, maybe their whatever affair, whatever it is. So there are more possibilities there. You yourself also sometimes successful. Your friends are also successful. Your parents are also successful. Your neighbors are also successful. So likewise, then the possibility is that you get more opportunities to become happy. So if you are a person who are seeking to be happy, so these are the opportunities in a way. Rather than being sort of so selfish and expecting you yourself to be happy, so why can't we find happiness through someone else's success? Rather than feeling jealousy of that success, how about deriving some happiness by seeing that he has been successful and she has been successful? She is beautiful, she is handsome. And are we able to appreciate that? Rather than having kind of possessiveness, I'm talking here, kind of a more appreciative kind of job. That is why it is sometimes translated as appreciative job, altruistic job, sympathetic job. So these are different meanings, sometimes talking to mudita. So, and then we can say, now if you are able to develop as a meditation, now we discussed very briefly about loving kindness meditation, saying you can use a kind of very short phrase, may I be well, may I be happy, may I be free from suffering. May you be well, may you be happy, may you be free from suffering. Likewise, you can use a very simple phrase and you have to feel that from your heart. It is not simply, you know, parroting. It is not simply you are talking that. Rather, you need to feel, may I be well, may I be happy, may I be free from suffering, may I be well, may I be free from suffering. So you have to feel that. It has to be very genuine. Similarly, if you can wish the same thing to another person, say you are talking to another person who that you are respect. That is another person whom you are respecting. And to that person also you can say, okay, may he be well, may he be happy, may he be free from suffering. You can honestly do that because you really honestly expect kind of a success or rather here in the loving kindness and the well-being of that person. Then you can wish. Similarly, in the mudita meditation, assume that your friend is successful. There are a person that you really like to be successful. Now say, for example, in the family, for example, the parents have their children and parents really want their children to be happy, to be successful. So as a mother, as a father, so when their child becomes successful, so parents can have that happiness. So because they honestly wish their success to their children. So when the child becomes more successful, then the parent may have that kind of happiness. So such kind of happiness, if we are capable, then we, not necessarily to be a parent, and you can be a human being, you can have such feeling to another human being. So you for the training purpose, you are first taking a person that we really like, and we really love that person, and we really want that person to be happy. We really want that person to be successful. We select that person first and we remember that person's success. Say, for example, I'm taking a simple example. Now say you are friendly with another person and you really want him or her to be happy, him or her to be successful. And now in your meditation part, with our meditation part, what you do is you remember an occasion that person was successful. Say he did well in an exam and he was quite very good, done really well. And he was also very happy and he assumed that he gave you a call and mentioned, okay, I did well. And he was all over my first call. Let's have a party in front of us. So like that, I mean, you really want to enjoy that. So you really appreciate that there's someone else's happiness. Now imagine that situation. At that time, how you felt. It's not that you want to be happy, becoming. It's not that you want to be successful, but you want your friend to be successful. And you really, really honestly expect that. And it has happened. So that is the moment now we are taking to our mind, and now we are developing that attitude in our mind, that feeling in our mind. And you close your eyes, and now you imagine that person is in front of you. And the moment that he is talking to you about that success, he has done hard work and a lot of hard work, and as a result of that, suppose that he passed the exam. And you are also really happy about it. You also appreciate his hard work. And you are imagining that incident, and you are developing that quality in yourself. You remember that quality, how you felt when he was talking to me that. So now that you are recognizing that quality in your heart, that is the quality we are now trying to further build, further develop, further improve. So that further and further we can expand. We have to recognize that. Then further be happy about it, and you can even spread that quality. And there are some systematic trainings available to do that. Say it's like many people, like not just one friend, maybe if you have 10 friends, say you can do that just to cultivate that as a quality in your mind. And then further and further you can expand that to many directions, and to the whole universe also you can have that kind of a attitude in your mind. So that's why then it is kind of opening of your mind. As I mentioned, if your attention is very focused, only limiting to a particular object, then your mind is narrowed down. You know, it's kind of restricted, constrained only to a limited area. But on the other hand, so these kind of qualities are opening yourself. These are two things. Actually, unfortunately, today people are not talking about this. They are not investigating about this. So these beautiful human qualities are available with us as human beings. But unfortunately, we are very restricted, very constrained, only to very limited, narrow scope. But our hearts are endowed with these good qualities, these Brahma Viharas. I mean, these are some inbuilt characteristics available in our heart. Unfortunately, we are not allowing them to grow. We are always using this hatred, say, cruelty, jealousy, envy, competitiveness. All these are the ones we are developing. So these beautiful qualities simply fade off. Simply they not blossom. But here, in the Brahma Vihara practice, so these beautiful qualities now we are trying to uplift. We are trying to recognize and we are trying to appreciate and allowing them to blossom. And there are, now this is already I have discussed. So typically what happens is we feel jealous or envy when someone is successful, but opposite is what we are talking here as Siddhita, how to become happy by seeing someone else's happiness or success. And therefore, sympathy, joy can be described as the perfect antidote to those negative feelings. And by meditating on and practicing the positive quality of genuine sympathetic joy, one will be able to counter these negative emotional reactions and be able to feel happy and joy for the success and happiness of others. And I mean, these are very powerful qualities. You can probably have heard about dhyana. So those are the absorptions, kind of very deep concentrations. And even this altruistic joy can be used to develop such deep concentrations. So they are not merely talks, they are not merely symptoms, rather they can be developed to higher levels. And actually, if I refer a little to the suttas available from the Buddha's teachings, so Maharagulavada Sutta, which is in the Majjhima Nikaya, so Buddha advised to his very son, Rahula, develop meditation on altruistic joy. For when you develop meditation on altruistic joy, any discontent will be abandoned. So if you have as a son, as a daughter, so if you have kind of discontent in your mind, if you are developing these qualities, then you can quickly lose that when you are feeling discontent. Now the point is, now assume that you don't feel discontent right now. And now you are developing this as a kind of a training. Now you are familiar with how to develop and you are familiar with this quality. And now you are training yourself. So you did that for 1 month, for example. And later time, due to some reason, you feel discontent. You feel unhappy, you feel depressed, and you feel a little, you know, regretting about what has happened. That is the time when you recall, oh, I did that kind of a practice. So these qualities are not to hide. These things are practical to use in our life. So we can't expect our lives to be always up and up. It's always up and down, man. That's the life. So life has all these ups and downs. But when you are in a good mood, in a good state, if you are developing these states and keep them ready with you, and at another moment when you feel unhappy, when you feel a little depressed, you feel discontent, you have a little, you know, moody day, upset day, and at that moment, rather than being depressed by the whole thing, you can recall why the sun was quite happy by practicing that particular practice, that particular training. Why can't I switch to that? Why am I going and further and further thinking about this whole negative states? You can question yourself. So therefore, these are not kind of obsolete practices. These are something that you can use practically to sort of get out of the kind of depressive mood. I mean, how many people are subjected to various, say, mental diseases today? Kind of unrest or maybe depressed moods. So rather than allowing the mind to, you know, go and sort of hide in those depressive moods, if you are capable of understanding that at early stage, you can now simply let it go, that depression, whatever the regret, whatever the remorse, and you can switch back, okay, I was happy when he was talking that. Why can't I go back to that happiness? So likewise, practically you can, you know, replacing the bad part, replacing the negative part with the positive part, this positive quality. So that is why those are quite useful practically. And then in another sutta, Buddha talks about in Tevicha Sutta, and there Buddha mentioned, then with his heart filled with sympathetic joy, he dwells suffusing one father, the second, the third, and the fourth. Thus he dwells suffusing the whole world, upward, downward, across, everywhere, always with the heart filled with sympathetic joy, abundant, unbounded, without hate or ill will. Now this is the maximum, actually. This is common to each and every Brahma Vihara. So this is the maximum one can achieve. So where you become like a sun, you know, sun, the S-U-N, sun, like you are radiating the loving kindness to the whole universe. You are radiating compassion to the whole universe. And similarly here, you are radiating mudita, what you call the sympathetic joy, to the whole universe. So there are no limits to our heart. You can just imagine what the kind of a quality we have as human beings. I mean, we have this capacity as human beings. We have this capacity to sort of open up ourselves, no need to be really constrain our mind to a very limited, narrow area, but we have the capacity to open up, to fully comprehend the whole thing, the whole universe. That is why the end, actually, here in the Brahma Viharas, you are like a source of spreading metta, source of spreading karma, spreading mudita, like that. And then, so this can be practiced in any posture. You don't need to have only a sitting posture. You can practice at any posture. And you feel relaxed enough to begin meditation proper, one could start by being a dear person to one's mind, and we already discussed that, how to systematically practice that. And another beautiful thing is, as your mind becomes happy, your body also becomes lighter, your body also becomes relaxed, and you may even feel some joy in your body as well. It's not limited to the mind. The mind represents in your body. If you are laughing, if you are, you know, I'm just taking an example. So body also feels happy. It's meaning here, if the mind is sort of completely open, joyful, so body also becomes more and more healthy. Now, I mean, this is a little deep. Buddha is talking about enlightening factors, what we call the bhajangas, connected with mudita. So even in the deep vipassana, one can use mudita as a kind of a, kind of a lubricant. Sometimes vipassana meditation can be a little dry because you are seeing the impermanence and all these characteristics, but you can keep mudita as a kind of a lubricant to that process. So that's also possible. And now, a little this is interesting. There can be, far enemies and the near enemies to mudita. So this is very interesting. Now, resentment, anger is the near enemy, sorry, far enemy of the symbol of big joy. That means that rather than you being happy, you being angry about that person. So that's the opposite part. But on the other hand, so when you are feeling happy, it may be kind of artificial happiness. You simply want to show that we are happy. That's also there. You are simply shaking hands. Oh, my goodness, we did really well. But internally, you don't really feel it. That is how people are doing. They simply laugh. Oh, you are doing marketing. I don't know they are doing good marketing. So in marketing, because you may be learning, I don't know, you are laughing with the customer and all these things, and you are showing that you are really interested about their success. Internally, no feeling. That's the point. So, here, what we are talking is, really you feel it, and you really want them to be successful. Say you are a businessman, or you are a partner, or whatever it is. Now, when you are doing a business with another person, are you really wishing that person also to be successful, or you want that person to be, completely failure, and you yourself want to be successful? So that is typically what happens. But if one has these sort of things, so sympathetic joy, then I mean, he also a human being. He also runs a family. He also has children. He also has parents. He also has something to look after. So how then I only can be happy? How then I only be successful and he become utter failure? Many people are going to be suffering. So we as a nation, or we as a country, or we as a society. So if we are thinking like that, then we can't be too much selfish. So we may have some concern about the other parties, other people as well. Now, one near enemy of this mudita is that you may be feeling happy, but honestly, you are not really feeling happy. Little artificial kind of happiness. The other thing is, sometimes you can be happy thinking that the possessiveness, for example, say you have your children, say, as a mother, as a father, you may be happy only by seeing your child to be successful, but not someone else's child to be successful. Why is that? Because he is my son, he is my son, he is my daughter. But you can't be happy by seeing someone else's daughter being successful. That is where the possessiveness comes into the picture. But here we don't want to, disturb this mudita by such possessiveness. You better keep it as open to anyone. Then it is beautiful. And those are the areas that we can think of. And then there are many benefits are there in this practice. So it will, if you keep you more happy, you'll be a more happy person, not a, depressed kind of person you are, kind of a person with a smile every day, because you have a lot of things to be happy. And then, and you can develop other qualities. Now, the thing is, now, if you want to be successful in your other things, so you have to have a positive atmosphere in your mind. If you are completely always unhappy, finding fault with others, and all this, that negativity is basically governing in your mind, it's very unlikely you will be successful. Even if you are successful, I mean, it may not last so long because you don't know how to keep it. Say, you don't know how to maintain a relationship. Say, if you are a little jealous of the other person, now say you have an affair. If you have a jealousy to another person, say you have a love affair, so are you being jealous of the success of the other person? Or are you really wish the success of the other person? Now, if you are having the mudita, then you really honestly wish the success of the other person, isn't it? Then what is going to happen to the relationship? The relationship will cultivate, relationship will grow, because you honestly know, okay, my partner is really wishing my success. not he is jealous of my success. He or she is not jealous of my success. Rather, he or she is honestly wishing my success. The other party will feel it. Then the relationship will grow. So the other friends, suppose you have several friends. If they are really friends, then those friends really wish your success, not your failure. So that is the friendship. So therefore, if you are developing these qualities, so that means you can maintain a good relationship with others. And then you can easily eradicate negative feelings. And then you can take out the selfishness and self-centered nature in your mind. And meditation also with joy will help attain deep levels of concentration that we have already shown you. And then and you feel more connected with the whole society. You feel more connected with other people. It's not that you have a very narrow mind and very limited small world. Only you are there, no one else is there. Rather, you have many friends. You are happy with many others. And I will lead to happiness in this life. And then sustained sympathy, joy of the mind will, after death, need to rebirth in the Brahman world. So that's the maximum level. Those are the there. And if sympathetic joy is available to another level, you can use it in the Vipassana practice as well. So these are the references I have used. So those are the things that I like to share with you with respect to mudita, altruistic joy. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Tiruvan Sarana Swaminathan, so can I start from this side?
Yes.
Today we have 5 questions. And first question is a general question. That is, dear Bhante, we heard last time from the organizers that they are planning to tour for Bhante in Australia to conduct residential retreats. I have participated in a residential retreat and found that the practice and experience is very different from daily practice of 1 hour. Is this because we get a chance to keep aside the 5 defilements for longer time to observe the workings of the mind? Much merits for Bhante's explanation. How a full on retreat can elevate our practice with metta. That is the end of the question.
Actually, we'll discuss that later. Today, actually, we have a different session. I don't want to brag about myself here. So, we'll take this question another time.
Okay, Bhante. Then we will move to the second question. That is mindful walking, about mindful walking. Dear Venerable Sir, mindful walking. My walking path is 30 steps carpeted floor. I start focusing on the lower body. I feel the pressure on the sole, leg movement, and rough and smooth touches of the carpet. I can walk 2 to 3 rounds focusing on walking. Sometimes I get distracted when turning around. However, this distraction gets more and more when I complete 3 to 4 rounds. The details I observe seem not clear as well. I cannot control my mind and feel irritated. However, I continue and time to time mind comes back to walking. Then this happens throughout 30 to 40 minutes. Much merits for your guidance with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, we can talk about walking meditation a little bit. So this is a good practice, mindfulness practice. So what we do is we select a path first. So you can see the outside, you can see walking paths available that you can do yourself. So what we do is simply go to select a walking path, and without taking much to your mind, simply walk, just to familiarize with the walking, just to, you know, to be free from any drowsiness, laziness, then you walk. And then later, once you are a little sort of active, then you come to the end of the walking path and keep your hands in the front like this or like this, because shaking the hands or waving the hands will be a little disturbing. And while keeping hands like this, now you start walking. And the speed of the walking is the speed that you are familiar with. Say, for example, if you are familiar with some slow walking, no problem. If you are familiar with fast walking, that's also fine. If you are walking moderate, that's also fine. It depends on to what speed that you are familiar with. Now, it doesn't mean that while practicing mindful walking, that we have to walk extremely slow. Rather, you need to find out what is the most convenient speed of your walk. So, assume now you are able to do that. Now, assume that the body is simply walking. While the body is walking, now the point we need to understand is now your foot is touching the ground. And then again, the next foot is touching the ground. The next foot is touching the ground. So, constantly, our foot is touching the ground. Our feet touching the ground. So, our attention is now, we are trying to keep on the foot, on that touch sensation. Now, one problem is, you can see various things. So, while sitting, are you keeping your eyes closed or open? I mean, the meditation, usually closed, right? So, the walking meditation, you have to do while eyes open. And you are doing it outside, from inside. To do it outside. And many others are also walking it too. So it is somewhat challenging in that sense because others are also walking. You yourself have to walk and you have to find the path also. At the same time, you have to keep your attention on the sensation of your foot. That's the challenge. And that is very interesting because mind start distracting, but you have to quickly recognize, okay, the foot is touching the ground. And you feel some gross sensation, it's a kind of invitation, it's a kind of a reminder to your mind to come back to yourself. Because while walking, how many of you are with yourself? Now, while body walks, what are you thinking? But typically we think so many things, right? While the body is walking, we think about the next day, think about the job, we think about the education, we think about the election, upcoming election, something. Many, many things are there, right? While walking, the body is walking, but I am not with the body. We are not paying enough attention to this walking. Now, in the walking practice, what we are doing is we are trying to feel each and every sensation happens during walk. When your left foot is touching the ground, you are trying to keep your attention there. Right foot is touching the ground, you are trying to keep your attention there. Now, the question they are asking is that when you are turning back at the edge, you are coming to the corner, to the end of the walking path. So that is the place where usually mind can get distracted because you have to do a complete 180 degree turn, right? So as a result of that, your mind can get distracted. So one technique that what you can do is rather than immediately turning back, you can actually walk to the edge and then simply stand still. You are coming to the standing position. Instead of immediately turning, you are coming to the standing position and then slowly turn back. And again, don't immediately come back. Again, be in the standing position. And then start coming back. So therefore, it's a kind of a junction is there, kind of a variation is there. So during that variation, you are very careful. And you are doing that very carefully. So that your mind is not distracted, but rather keeping with yourself. You are fully aware of what's going on. And after that, you establish mindfulness and again coming back. So I hope you can do that. And the other thing is, you can use noting. Say, for example, when your right foot is touching the ground, when you are fully sure, very sure that it is the right foot, it is not the left, it is the right, you can mentally note as right. When your left foot is touching the ground, you can mentally note it as left. So this is very much like a mental confirmation. There is a physical activity. So that physical activity you can mentally confirm. That is what we are calling as labeling or noting. So that really helps your mind to get collected. You know, otherwise mind will get kind of scattered. Assume that our mind's attention is always like scattered from here and there and this and that. But here, what kind of a technique is, when your foot is touching the ground, when you are fully aware of that cross sensation, now you are mentally nodding it as, okay, this right, this left, this right, this left. That helps you to further and further collect to your, that particular place. I think you can use that those techniques, and that will reduce distractions and try to be aware of the body. We can go to the next question. I can't hear you. I think you are mic muted.
Third questions out of five. It is a general question. Dear Bhante, how do we apply mindfulness techniques when talking to friends and family? Bhante advised sometimes back that to avoid completely immersed in our sensual world, we should take one leg out from those dwellings and keep somewhere grounded in the present moment. I practice this when I get strong emotions such as anger, irritation, etc. until they pass away. When we are talking casually and emotionally, can we apply any technique to keep ourselves grounded somewhere without getting immersed completely in that world? Much merits. That is the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, if you are able to practice to some extent, may not be immediately possible, but if you are a little familiar, now say for example, that is what say while mindful breathing. So we allow the body to breathe naturally, and we like an outsider, we are simply watching. In-breath happens, like an outsider, I am fully aware of in-breath happens. Out-breath happens, like an outsider, I am fully aware of out-breath happens. So it's a kind of a training that we are training ourselves, our mind, not to get too much involved with the incident, not to get too much involved in the experience. Rather, we can sort of do a kind of detached observation, kind of non-judgmental observation. You are not really interfering in the process. Rather, you have the capacity to really detach and then observe. So if you are doing that as a practice, then it's a matter of applying the same attitude, same technique in your mental things as well. Now as you are asking, now say you are talking to a person and you feel emotional. So that means you couldn't maintain that distance. You get too much involved and you are feeling more emotional. That means you are getting too much involved, you are thinking and you are adding things to the situation. But if you have kind of a training coming from mindfulness, then those emotions may not grow to very higher levels, because while talking you are able to maintain a little distance. It's not that you are completely not feeling about the other person. You can feel, but not too much involved kind of feeling. So you may be compassionate to the other person, but you are not crying for that person. So you may feel empathetic towards the other person, but you are not sort of emotionally sort of driven by the feelings. So likewise, so as we are moving in the mindfulness practice, so this kind of a detached observation is something that we are growing. So I think the solution is, I prefer you are going back to the Kayanupassana, the body establishment of mindfulness in the body. And that will help you to have further training on this area. Then you slowly be able to apply the same into your mind as well.
Fourth question out of five. It is relating to mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, after 1 hour walking practice, I don't feel the breath or rising and falling when I sit down. I can observe the sitting sensation of the pressure on my back and spine. This seems like a flat sensation than the cyclic sensation of breathing or rising and falling. Can I use this as my sitting meditation object? Appreciate Bhante's explanation. With metta, that is the end of the question.
Can you repeat? I mean, the breath become kind of flat?
So I will start again. After 1 hour walking practice, I don't feel the breath or rising and falling When I sit down, I can observe the sitting sensation of the pressure on my back and spine. This seems like a flat sensation than the cyclic sensation of breathing or rising and falling. Can I use this as my sitting meditation object? Appreciate Bhante's explanation with metta. That is the
end. Yeah, I mean, no problem. I mean, if you can't feel any rising and falling, you can use those thrust sensations available at your, say, when you are sitting cross-legged, there is a kind of a strong sensation there, and your buttocks touching the cushion, there is a strong sensation there. You can use them to sort of establish mindfulness. As you said, they are not much cyclical. But later, as your mindfulness refines, further sharpens, there also you can have kind of a variation. I mean, at the beginning you note them as kind of not cyclical, but very much like flattened. But when mindfulness becomes more sharper, you may understand it is not so flat. It's also kind of wavering. It's also changing. It's also going up and down. At the moment, no, it is very much like flat. But as your mindfulness further refines, you may be able to recognize the variations.
Last question, Bhante. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, I'd be very grateful if you could clarify how the last of the panchaskandhas, that is consciousness, is established in the mind. How it is sustained by thought giving rise to the creation of I, me and myself. How does memory contribute to this? Are there any of Lord Buddha's discourses explaining consciousness in detail? Why is consciousness referred to as a magician's trick? That is the end of the question.
Yeah. So this is a little deep. So basically, Buddha talks about five aggregates, form aggregate, feelings aggregate, the perceptions aggregate, then the formations aggregate, and the consciousness aggregate. So the consciousness aggregate, basically, when you are through your eyes, you see certain forms, and that seeing part is the consciousness aggregate. Through your ears, you can listen to various sounds. That listening part, the listening, that function is due to the consciousness aggregate. So that knowing, listening, say seeing, tasting, and all those things, that cognitive part, it is coming because of this consciousness aggregate. Now, one thing of this consciousness aggregate is it is helping to sort of divide. Okay, here I am and there you are. So that division happens because of the consciousness aggregate. Now, as a result of that, what happens is I have the notion. So this consciousness aggregate, the typical consciousness aggregate doing this, it always divide me and others, I and others, I and you, kind of a division happens. Now I feel kind of certain, sometimes unhappy, I feel angry, I feel worried, I feel lust and all these things because I am here, you are there. So this division itself is a function of the consciousness aggregate. Now say we are developing very higher levels of vipassana. So this division start less and less. So you are aware of things, but there is no such division. So you are fully aware of the situation, but there is no kind of establishing your attention only to a particular phenomena. Rather you are having kind of an open awareness kind of thing. So they are on such situations, this established consciousness is not present, not available. Then only you are sort of not getting to those kind of illusory things, kind of ignorant things. Rather, you are capable of maintaining the mind in a more relaxed, unestablished, open, without any stress, without any tension. So that's that sort of thing. So the typical conscious activity, typical consciousness, what we call as the more fabricated kind of consciousness, is basically promoting more thinking, and ultimately you are feeling as I am here and you are there, and therefore we are building up our own different worlds. And I have my own world, you have your own world, so there are conflicts. So we are creating certain things. So this all creativity in the sense that mind made world, mind made I, mind made you, mind made different names, all these things are the creations of the consciousness we can see. So therefore Buddha mentioned, consciousness is like a magician. So it is capable of showing something is not, it is capable of showing something which is not really available, but sort of showing that it is available. Yeah, it is giving us a kind of feeling that I am available, but really it is not available, something like that.
That was the last question, Bhante. And okay. Are you going to open session for the audience in front of you, or are we
going to open session for the in front of me, but I like to close the Zoom session.
Okay. We come to the end of the program, Bhante. I would first like to thank Bhante for his valuable time. Also, we would like to pass our merits to everyone, both seen and unseen, who are enabling this program. And we pass our merits to all the participants for joining the program. With that, I would like to conclude the program today. Theruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Theruvan Sarnai.